Hello there. Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of the Rainmaker Site Building Roadmap. I am Jared Morris. I am joined today by the great Chris Garrett. Very excited to talk with you about how to use Rainmaker to turn blog traffic into subscribers. Mr. Garrett, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Looking forward to this one. This is a fun topic. It's, after all, a lot of the reason why people have a website, right?
Exactly. Well, yeah, especially a website on Rainmaker with so many built-in options to help you turn traffic into subscribers. So I had a lot of fun putting the tutorials together for this one. They go pretty in-depth, so I'm excited to share them with you. So let's dive in. This is the second webinar in our series on blogging as content marketing. If you missed the first session where we talked about, you know, setting up your blog, getting it ready to go so that you can start publishing effective content, definitely make sure that you catch up there with both the webinar and the Q&A. And we will, of course, be having a Q&A next week about this very topic. So depending on how long it takes us to get through these slides, we may or may not have a lot of time at the end for questions, but that's why we reserve the week after these webinars to just take your questions. So just make sure that you get those questions in after the webinar, and we will be able to address them next week. We're going to talk today about how to use Rainmaker to turn blog traffic into subscribers. And so we want to start by talking about the overview and the strategy. And we went over this slide in our last session, the attraction, retention, and conversion. And really in this session, we're kind of honing it in a little bit, you know, on the retention and a little bit of the conversion part, because this is about, okay, you've gotten someone to your website, now how do you keep them reading? And once they're reading, how do you actually turn that person into a subscriber? So Chris, do you want to give us just a little bit of a strategic overview here for what we need to be thinking about as we go through and start executing on some of these strategies?
Yeah, let's go back to the last slide so we can see everything. I wanted to really focus on retention before attraction, and that sounds really weird because we call it attraction, retention, and conversion. But what we have found over the years is people build websites, they start generating a lot of traffic and attention and activity, and they start getting a bit of a buzz around the website, except they're not capturing that attention with retention. They're not building the list. So people visit, they get excited, and they forget about you. So what we learned very early on through making our own mistakes and seeing other people is you have to have these retention features really early on, to the point now where a lot of people will launch a website and it's basically a holding page with an email form on saying coming soon. And you'll have seen there's a few people done that recently. It's one of the things that is counterintuitive, because it's like, how are you gonna get people onto your email list without traffic? But we're generating attention through social media, word of mouth. We're talking about what we do. We meet people at meetups. We might do some public speaking or get interviewed. So as soon as possible, you need to be capturing every little piece of attention you get people onto an email so you're not wasting any of that attention. So in the middle, you can see we try to use the blog as a home base. We try to get people to come to your home base, to your hub. So you might be doing YouTube videos, you might be doing Facebook Live, you might be doing social media, you might be seeing people offline, but everybody has an opportunity to keep in touch with you, and they give you permission, and that's the most important thing. We're all about getting people's permission. But again, it's not as simple as saying, please add your email address here, so we're going to talk about that. So part of this is converting people from being a visitor into an email subscriber, so there's a bit of conversion, and part of it is attraction, but keeping that cycle going, keeping people attracted, keeping people engaged, keeping people coming back. Why would they want to see more of your content and keep coming back? So this is absolutely vital, and you really shouldn't do anything else unless you have these features on your site ready to capture interest.
Absolutely. So, in this blogging as content marketing series, as I mentioned in our last webinar, we talked about how to set up and manage your Rainmaker blog. Today, we're diving into how to use Rainmaker to turn blog traffic into subscribers. And here is our roadmap for today. So we're going to talk about the editorial calendar, which might have fit in the previous webinar, but I wanted to make sure that we covered it because it's a powerful feature inside of Rainmaker that some people don't realize is there, but it is, and it can be really helpful in enabling you to organize your content marketing in a very useful way. We're also going to talk about tools to keep people reading, because getting someone to click on a headline and visit your site is one thing, but getting them to actually consume your content is another. And the first part of that is, of course, having good content worth consuming. And the second part is presenting it in a way that makes it inviting to consume. And so we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the two types of opt-in methods, and then we'll talk about where to present the opt-in. And then finally, we will talk about how to create a powerful opt-in incentive so that your website just becomes a subscription-driving engine, which is the big idea. Chris, any other prefacing thoughts before we dive in and start talking about the editorial calendar?
Yeah, a lot of people overlook those first two bullets. An editorial calendar is all about engagement, keeping people engaged, because you've got a pattern, a rhythm of content production. So you don't have to post every day, but please get into a rhythm. Please get into a habit of creating valuable content on a regular basis. And the second, tools to keep people reading. It's all about engagement. So we're not just talking about email forms, which is, you know, one of the focuses, but the other part is we create content because we want people to read it. So those two bullets are very important to get up front.
Yep. All right. So let's dive in. Let's start with the editorial calendar, because you've got to keep your content marketing efforts organized for them to work, certainly in the long term. And we're all here to create something sustainable and that will work for us in the long term. So here's a tutorial about how to use the editorial calendar. So the first thing is find it. And so you want to go to the content menu and locate the link for editorial calendar. Click on that link, and then you will see the editorial calendar. And this is an example here of the editorial calendar at rainmaker.fm, so the editorial calendar that we use for our podcast network. And what this gives you is, at a glance, what content is published. And so you can see the content that's published has kind of this lighter text color there. What is upcoming, and then what is scheduled or still in draft? So, you know, obviously I created this yesterday. We're recording this on the 23rd. So the 22nd, the 21st, the 20th, those were days in the past, so they're grayed out. This content is already published. You can see here what is upcoming, and right now we have two posts in draft. Neither one of them is scheduled, but if these were scheduled, then you would see the term draft here not there anymore. But again, it's at a glance, you can see what content is there and what content is upcoming, and it's much better to see that in a calendar format than just seeing the listing in the post edit screen. Now, you can alter what you see. So if you scroll up a little bit on that screen, you'll see a button for admin screen options, just like you would see when you're editing a post or editing a page. And you use these screen options to control what information is shown and how many weeks are displayed. So you can decide if you want to show the author status and time of day. Maybe you don't want one of those on there or any of them on there. And then you can also choose how many weeks are displayed. And again, you can choose up to 8. So those will all be displayed then on that one page at a glance. To add a new item on a specific date, you don't have to go out and create a new post kind of the normal way. You can do it right here in the editorial calendar. So if you scroll over the date bar, it will reveal this link for a new post. Click New Post, and when you do that, it will give you a modal pop-up window, and then you just need to complete those fields. So you give your post a title. You can put content in here. You can add the time that it's going to go out, whether it's still in draft, scheduled, or published, and then what post type it is, and you can use the editorial calendar for both posts and for podcasts. Once you do that, then the new item will appear on the date that you've chosen with the time, and then it can be edited, deleted, or reviewed right from here. So again, you can do all of this, access all of this from right here in your editorial calendar, and then if you want to change the date, you can just click on an item and drag it to change the date. So if you want to mix and match and see how different things will look in sequence and change up the sequences, just click and drag these items and it'll automatically change the date for you. So it's extremely simple to use, very powerful to use, and will help you keep everything that you're doing really organized and give you that at-a-glance view, which can help out so much. I know one of the ways that Stephanie Flaxman uses the editorial calendar at Copyblogger is she's very mindful of headlines. You know, not doing three straight how-to headlines in a row. You know, maybe not doing three straight number headlines in a row. And you can just look at a glance and really get a good idea of what's upcoming, what you've done. And so you can make some of those decisions, and it helps you be able to do that much better.
Yeah. So I use the editorial calendar for ideas. So I use it as a notepad and try to have a spread, and as Stephanie does, try to have a mix. But also you might want to have regular days. You might want to have a rhythm for a type of content. So on my Maker Hacks blog, my friend Ben is going to try to do a YouTube video every Thursday, publish it Thursday. He records it on the weekend, edits it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and schedules it so it goes out on a Thursday. So he's done that this week, and last week he's going to try to keep that up. So in the editorial calendar, you can see how everything fits around that. You can see the patterns. You can put ideas in for the future. And because you can drag and drop, you don't have to have them set in stone. You don't have to say, okay, I've got that scheduled now. It has to stay there. You can move things around. So you can see if there's any gaps. And you can see if there's any conflicts. Like, you don't want to have certain content go out on national holidays or international events where it's not going to get the attention, or it's not going to really fit in context. You know, if there's like any content that might be misinterpreted because of the day it lands on, you know, there's religious holidays and things like that. And then there's things in your industry or niche that you would need to plan for. So really focus in, as well as the upcoming weeks, thinking of the upcoming months. You know, might need to focus on back to school or vacations or Christmas or, you know, New Year sales, Black Friday, all of that kind of thing. There are events, there are situations, there are expos and meetups and things that happen within your niche that you might want to write about, because you don't want to write about them on the day, because you'll not rank for it on the day. You'll only rank if you've prepared and get ahead of it. So the editorial calendar is good for getting a rhythm, which is good for getting return visitors. It's also good for preparing so that you can capitalize on the buzz around events and things that are happening in your niche that you could prepare for.
Absolutely. And then one thing I didn't mention is you can scroll forward and backward on the calendar using these buttons right here. So if you want to go forward in the view. Okay, so that is the editorial calendar. Let's move on now to tools to keep people reading, because you've attracted their attention. Now you've got to keep it. And you got to do something with it, right? You want to keep them reading, keep their eyes flowing down the page like water. And one way that you do that is with images. So we want to talk a little bit about images here in this session, because you want to begin with an image to grab people's attention. And like I said, to keep their eyes flowing down the page. So here's an example of a post I wrote recently on copyblogger.com about SEO. And so you can see, you know, this is above the fold. When someone clicks over to the site, they see the headline, they see some of the social sharing numbers, and then bam, there's an image right there. So it attracts your eye. On ours, you know, we add a quote from the article that kind of sums up the article, almost like a little subhead to the headline, yet another selling point, a reason for people to read this. You can certainly do that. Or just having an image, you know, something that is in some way representative of the post, is just pleasing to the eye. And it, when your eye is attracted to an image, it's naturally going to go from the headline down to the image, and then where's the next place it's going to go? Right down to actually reading the content. So having an image at the top of a post, obviously a pretty well-proven way to grab attention and keep attention. And you can also include images within a post to re-engage attention, right? To kind of break up text, because, you know, as we know, people obviously like reading online, but when you have long, long lines of text, it can start to get a little monotonous. Attention can start to waver a little bit. And so having that image re-engages that attention. Hopefully it's not a superfluous image and it has, you know, some kind of meaning to it. And you can add captions for explanation and for credit if necessary. You can also edit images right from the Rainmaker dashboard. And so this is a post from assemblycall.com. We have a series about artifacts. And this is a post about some game-worn basketball shorts. As you can see, the shorts, Chris, that we wore when we played college basketball in the 70s were basically underpants. So,
nice.
Which is kind of funny. So, but you can actually edit images right from inside of your Rainmaker dashboard. So you can, you know, align it left, you can align it center, align it right, and then if you click edit right here, you can actually go in and edit it. And so this allows you to really simply add a caption. You can adjust the size. Obviously, you have some different options down here for image title attributes, image CSS classes. But then you can also edit the original image. And so if you click here, I don't have a slide that shows this, but if you click in here to edit the original image, you can flip the image, you can crop the image, you can change the aspect ratio of the image. So some of those things that you might do in Photoshop real quick before you upload the image, you know, say that you forget to do that, and then you put the image in here, well, you can do it once it's already uploaded, which is a nice little feature when you're in there editing a post.
So Jared mentioned image captions. They help skimming as well. It's amazing how when somebody skims down a page before deciding if they want to read it or not, how the captions will help give context to the image. So if you've got an intriguing image and you've got a caption, it can help people decide this is for them. And then with the image editing, I found that a lot of people are using the smartphone to upload images, and that's great. Except they often come out rotated 90 degrees. So a lot of people use their phone vertically, but they actually want a horizontal image. You can actually rotate it using the built-in tool. So it's not just for resizing and cropping, you can actually rotate as well, which is vital if that's how you're developing your pictures.
A couple quick relevant questions I want to hit here. Christine asks, back to the editorial calendar, when you create a new post outside of the editorial calendar, is it automatically added to the calendar, or do you have to add it manually? Great question. It is automatically added, so it'll be in there for you when you go back to the editorial calendar if it is a post or a podcast episode. And then Paul asks, would you lead with a video instead of an image if you have a video blog post? Certainly, if a video is relevant, I think there are great reasons to lead with a video up at the top. It'll all just depend on the context and what your audience expects, but I can certainly see that being a reasonable decision at the top.
I usually use a couple of lines of text and use that as the excerpt as well to get people to watch the video. So I give people a reason to watch the video. So I actually lead with text in that circumstance because the videos do stand out. But I also use featured images, and what I do is I screenshot the YouTube page with the play button and I use that as my featured image. And Matt asks, does the editing the image impact page load speed or SEO? No, it shouldn't negatively affect any of that, and actually adding your alt text, title text, and caption can improve your SEO, and we'll talk about that in the future session.
Yep. Okay. So let's talk now about subheads and bullets, which are items of a page that are really easy to overlook, but really, really powerful when it comes to making a page inviting and keeping people moving down and continuing to read. So I want you to look at this long block of text, right? And this is that post about the basketball shorts that I was showing you earlier. I mean, that is one long block of text. You know, one thing that isn't really doesn't fall within subheads and bullets is also just using shorter sentences and shorter paragraphs, which you might say that this long block of text could use. But if you look at that, it should be quite clear how we could use subheads and bullets to fix it and make it more inviting to read. And the nice thing is, using the Rainmaker editor makes that really easy and simple to do. So what you want to do from a strategic standpoint is find a natural breaking point in the content, you know, so a place where it's really, you know, you're kind of talking about one thing and you're transitioning into something else, that natural breaking point, you can add a subhead that serves as both kind of a transition and then just an overarching, you know, headline about that section, which is all that a subhead is. So what you want to do is hit that break and then either take text that's already there or create something new for the subhead, highlight that text, and then typically you want to choose either heading 2 or heading 3 from the editor. You don't want to choose heading 1 because heading 1, that should be what your headline is. And you only want to have one H1 tag on your page. So just depending on your preference or maybe what you've done with custom CSS, you want to choose either heading 2 or heading 3 for yours. For example, on Copyblogger, we always use H3 tags for our subheads. And so highlight that. Choose the heading size that you want, and then you will see the heading look like this. And then for bullets, you want to identify sections of text. This is the easiest way to identify bullets, but identify sections of text that are lists broken up by commas. You know, so like if you have a sentence and it's, you know, has three different items that are broken up by commas, you can pretty easily put each of those items on its own line and then choose a bulleted list from the editor. So you put each of these on their own line, and this previously was just all in one big line of text. So each one is on its own line. I highlight them, choose bulleted list, and then they're going to show up as bullets. And you can see right away, doesn't that just look better? It's got a more professional, polished feel. It's easier to read, much more inviting to read, and that's the kind of experience that we want to give to our audience. So you remember this from earlier, the long, uninviting block of text. Now you look over here, and which one looks more inviting to read? I would say the one over to the right. Hopefully you agree with that. And again, there's still more that can be done with this page. Shortening paragraphs, adding additional subheads, other opportunities for bullets. And certainly when you combine all of that and then have some images in there, you don't want to overclutter the page, but you certainly want to simplify it and add white space, which helps people to read easier and keep them moving down the page. Thoughts on that, Chris, before we move on?
Yeah, you can see if you just like squint, or if for me, take my glasses off, the first block is gray and the second block has more visual interest, and you know, you can look away and look back and see what captures your eye. It's the subhead. And the interesting thing is people do glance at an article before deciding if it's going to be worth the while. So anything that adds visual interest, anything that shows them there's some value there, anything that shows some curiosity value, it's going to get them to read the whole thing. But also, those subheads, you can put your keywords in, and it's going to help your search engine traffic as well.
Yeah. I mean, Chris, don't you want to know what the great achievement was in the 1972-73 season? I mean, that curiosity gap is strong, right?
I really do. And especially now you've associated it with underpants, it's really coming.
Yes. Always, always a key. If you can associate your content with underpants, that'll get people subscribing.
Right.
Always. Okay, so the third section is interlinking and then putting articles together in a series. And, you know, again, you're going to have a higher likelihood of getting someone to subscribe, getting someone to come back when they can engage with more of your content, be exposed to more of your content. And so that's the goal here. So I want to show you, this is the bottom of that example article about the basketball shorts. Okay, this is the very bottom of that article. And I want you to notice all the different ways that we encourage the audience to engage more with the content. Because if someone has made it all the way to the bottom of that article, chances are pretty good that they're interested in the history of Indiana basketball and probably interested in some of our other content. And so we want to give them some other ways. Okay, they're done. Now, where can we send them that would be another place that they would enjoy going? And so this text right here, all the way from the heading down to this final link, I have this text with the links included actually saved in a text expander. All right, and so what I do is I simply type the relevant command into the Rainmaker post editor once the rest of the post is done, and it populates in literally a split second. And so I know I've mentioned text expanders a couple of times on these webinars before. I want to show you what it actually does, because ever since I started using it, it's become a lifesaver and made me more efficient. So let me show you this. So pretend I'm just back here editing a post and, you know, all the content is in there and I'm at the end. If I just type in IU artifacts end, do you see how quickly that populated? And I got to determine, you know, what I wanted. And so I have, and I use A text for this, and then so I can pull over my A text right here. And I mean, I have tons of these set, and this is actually an untapped resource because I could actually do a lot more of these. But I have tons of these set for any type of blog post template that I have, any just little thing that I want at the end of a post, you know, that I want to go on all of them. And I want this to go right under the content. I don't want it to skip down to an after entry widget, which is why I want to actually type it in right here. So having a text expander is a lifesaver and certainly an efficiency helper for me. So just in case anyone isn't familiar with what a text expander is, I wanted to show you what that is. So all of this is populated in a split second. Now, what does it matter? Well, as you can see, it promotes the relevant Twitter account for this article series, as well as our quote-unquote online museum, which is basically an LMS that takes each one of these articles and then puts it into an LMS. So they're posted live on the site, and we'll tweet them out, but we also have them all compiled into one nice, tidy place, this IU Artifacts Online Museum, which does require a free membership to view. And we have like 20 or 25 of these now, and I've just been adding them one by one as we go, and eventually we'll do something more with that. But it makes it really easy for people to go check it out, and also when they go there, they're encouraged to create a membership if they haven't created one yet. And then we also have the author's email there at his request. So we put all of that right there in this bottom section. And then if you'll notice in the filed under section, this allows easy access to the post attached categories. Right, so someone can just click IU Artifacts and they can go see all the blog posts of this particular series. And you could also do this with tags too. So you can create an article series and tag it a specific way, and then you can give people that tag. You know, and say to see the rest of the articles in this series, click here. So a lot of different ways to organize that, to display that, just based on, again, your content, how you're interacting with your audience, how you have everything set up. And then finally, we have recent posts. So the recent posts will show all the recent content that has been published in chronological order. So again, you know, if someone's interested in the history, chances are they're probably interested in the present too, and so they can see the latest content that we have produced, and that kind of gives them an overview of what they can expect from our site.
Can you talk about the text expander just before we go on, because a few people are asking about it. So the one you downloaded is called A-Text, and that's for Mac, right?
Yes, I use A-Text for Mac. I think I used to use one that was literally called Text Wrangler was another one that I used. I think that was either Text Expander or an HTML editor now. I can't remember. But A-Text is the one I use now for Mac.
So we're going to drop links into the chat for Mac and Windows.
And literally all you do is you define that short, you know, little bit, and you just want to make sure that you define it as something you're not going to type regularly. So, like, I would never use my name, Jared, as a text expander because I type that all the time. And so, you know, there would be no point in doing that. But, like, for instance, I have one for AC email SIG, and that when I type that in, it's my signature for the assembly call. And then I have a different one for my signature for, you know, Rainmaker emails when I'm putting those together. So it's a lot that you can do with it.
Yeah, and so you can expand any text. And so Bob asks, can you expand CSS? Yes. So if you're just dropping in a piece of CSS that you often use, you might as well put it into your text expander. So it does the copy and paste for you based on a keyword that you type.
Yep.
And Catherine asks about the recent post. That's done with a widget. That's in the after entry widget, I believe.
Yep, we're gonna show that right now. So basically go to design and content areas and then go to your after entry widget, and then you can drag in the recent post widget. And so that, if you're looking right here in available widgets, if you scroll down, you'll see it down there. But just drag it in. You can obviously drag it to any content area, but that one specifically is in the after entry content area, and then you can add a title to it. Otherwise, it defaults to recent posts. And then you can choose the number of posts that you want to show and decide if you want to display the date, click save, and it is ready to go for you right there. Cool. Chris, what other insight do you have for us about interlinking an article series?
The great thing about interlinking an article series is, as well as reducing your bounce rate, so your bounce rate is how many people just visit one page and then leave, it gives people an idea that you've got a lot more value to offer. And the longer they stay on your site, the more they're going to pick up your personality and your value, and the more they're going to want to have some sort of connection with you and more relationship with you, and the more they're going to want to come back. But also, by saying this is a series and there's going to be more in future, you're giving them a sense of future value, and we'll talk about that when we get to opt-in incentives as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. So let's move on now to the two types of opt-in methods. All right, they are simple, they are flexible, and they are reliable. So the first one is the opt-in widget. And like we've shown this maybe in a previous Q&A, but I want to go into it in more depth here. So to use the opt-in widget, you want to go to design content areas, which is where we just were, and then you will find in available widgets, you will find the opt-in form widget. And so you want to grab that, drag it over into whichever content area you want to put it in. So for purposes of this example, I'm going to put it here in the after entry widget. So drag it over, and then obviously you click the downward arrow to expand it so that you can see all the different options. So you can add a title to it if you want to. You can also add text to show before the form. So the kind of text that you're going to want to put in here is going to be something to sell the value of this person opting in. And again, this is just a very crude, quick example that I put together. I would probably have a little bit more here, but want to become a smarter Indiana basketball fan. All right, it's a question. It delivers a benefit, right? The benefit is, okay, if I subscribe, I'll be a smarter Indiana basketball fan. That's really what you want to stress. And you want to get people to stop, consider it, and then in your own way, sell them on the benefits of subscribing. And you can also define text to show after the form. So again, that could be a testimonial. It could be anything else that is going to either show appreciation or, again, reinforce the benefits of subscribing. So you can do a lot with those fields. And then you choose your opt-in service. All right. And so you click here, and you can choose either custom, Feedburner, or Rainmail for the opt-in widget. And if you choose Rainmail, that will bring up these built-in options. So you can choose the list that you want people to go to when they opt in, and you can also define the thank you page that you want them to go to. And obviously, you know, if you choose custom, then you can use different third-party email systems. And so I can't go into all of those here on this session, but I will refer you to the knowledge base for how you can use the opt-in widget with those third-party services, because there are tutorials in there for how you can do that. As you go down in the opt-in widget, you can easily edit the email input text and then also the button text before saving. So maybe you want it to be subscribe now instead of go or whatever it might be. You can change that text very easily and then make sure that you click save to save your options. So here's how it would look, right? So this is the opt-in form that currently appears right below the recent post widget. Because again, if you see here where I have it underneath the recent post widget. Okay, so that's why in the example, it shows underneath recent posts, and you can see right here. You know, want to become a smarter Indiana basketball fan? People can enter their email address. It comes out with a button for subscribe, and then my text underneath it. Okay. Now, let's say that I want to move it up to the top. So I can drag and drop to move the opt-in form above the recent post widget. Very, very simple and easy to do. And now the opt-in widget is above recent posts, and to me that's better because you increase the chances of conversion with the call to action a bit higher up on the page. Now, maybe you want to do it differently, and maybe your priority is to get people to click into some other recent posts, something to test, something to see what you like better, but it's very easy once you have those widgets created to just drag and drop them and put them in different locations and see what you like better. Thoughts on the opt-in widget, Chris?
Yeah, so Jared said he could have made the copy more inviting. Don't let that hold you back. So just get one in there and then improve upon it. And Jared also mentioned briefly that you could use the text areas to have a testimonial, to explain what they get. Anything like that that is going to give comfort and social proof and visible benefit is going to get more opt-ins. So the last thing you want to do is say, just please add your email address, because that's not going to work. But we're going to talk about that a little bit more. So all I'm saying is, don't use it as a reason not to do something. Just get in there, because that's going to be better than nothing.
Yep. Okay, so let's talk now about the second opt-in method, and that is an opt-in form. Okay, so you want to go to content and then forms, and actually when you scroll over it, you'll see a little button for add new, so you can just add new right there. And then what you want to do is give it a title, so I've given it the very generic title of opt-in form for purposes of demonstration. And so there are a bunch of different settings here, so you can display the form title, require the user to be logged in to view the form, add it to a page, submit it via Ajax. So a lot of different settings, you need to go through there and pick which settings are right for you. And then make sure that you click save. This is one of the habitual things I do that annoys me about my own use of Rainmakers. I'll go in here and create a form, and I put in the name, and I click these settings, and then I go to click on field settings, but it won't save if you do that. So you really want to make sure that when you're on form settings, there's a save button at the bottom of the page. Make sure that you go save when you create it, so then you can go into the other tabs. All right, and when you do that, go click field settings, and you can add as many different fields as you want to add, But if it's going to be a subscription opt-in form, then the two fields that you have to have are the email field and the submit field. And they can be that simple. That's all you need to have, because someone can add their email address and then click submit. But of course, if you want to add first name, if you want to add last name, if you want to add anything else, you can add that. But these are the two that you need to have at a minimum. All right, so you want to save it and then click the email marketing tab next. And when you go into the email marketing tab, you want to choose your email provider. Okay. Now, right now, for the site that I'm using for the demonstration, I have Rainmail hooked up, and so that's what I'm going to put on here. But if you have integrated your site with ConvertKit or MailChimp or one of the other email services that integrates with Rainmaker, they will show up here too, and you can use them as well. So choose your email service provider on this page. And then once you do that, you want to choose the email list or the autoresponder that the submitted email address should be placed onto. So both of them are here, both your lists and your autoresponders. And so you want to choose the one that you want to put people on. And then the next thing that you want to do is set your merge settings. So all the fields that are in your form are going to show up as options. So say that you had fields for first name, last name, you know, address. They would all show up here as choices. But if you're only asking for the email address, then you will only be able to set the email address field. That makes sense. So you want the merge, you want email to go with email. If you had first or last name, you would choose those here. But for a simple email form, you just want to make sure that you have email there in email address. And then, of course, once you do that, you want to click save and then go to the notifications tab. Right? And when you're on the notifications tab, you click add new. And then you can choose from one of three different types of notification. So you can do an email notification. This is often for yourself or for another admin. You know, maybe you want to be notified when someone subscribes to this particular list or using this particular form. You can send an email. Or maybe you want to do some kind of email thank you or whatever. There's obviously a lot of different reasons why you could do an email notification. So you can choose that. You can choose a redirect, which is what I've shown you here. And redirect is very simple. You just give it a descriptive name so that you can easily identify it later if you want to edit it, and then place the URL where you want them to be redirected to after they have submitted the form, or you can add a success message for immediate display to your new subscriber, probably a thank you message or a, you know, do this next or here's what to expect next message, and you can choose more than one. So you could have multiple notifications for one form. You just want to figure out the experience that you're trying to deliver to your audience and set up your notifications so that it does indeed deliver that experience. And then finally, when you're satisfied with your notifications, you want to save, and then your form is ready to go live. Chris, before I show folks how to put the form live, anything about the form setup that we should cover?
Just the main difference is the form versus the regular opt-in widget has got a lot more abilities. There's a lot more you can do with it. And so a lot of people wonder why we've got both. One's a quick and easy way of just getting the opt-in. The other one actually creates a real form that has a lot more you can do with it, and it can be embedded into any post or page. And it's good to have both.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, just to underscore that, I mean, you can go back here and look at all the different fields that you have here. So, I mean, you can ask people questions and get their responses. The forms are really, really powerful. And if you haven't gone in there and explored those, I would highly recommend that you do so. Because, again, this example is basically the most basic and simple way to use it, but there are so many ways to expand upon it and make it even more powerful. So, once you've created your form, what you want to do is you want to add it to a page. So for quick access to the short code, you can always click Manage Forms and then just find the short code and copy it. And then you can go in and paste it into any content area or post type that accepts short codes, which is most of them. There's also a way that you can append a form to a page in one of the sidebar widgets when you're editing a page or post. You'll find that in there. And you can also add the Forms widget to any content area. So if you go back into Design Content Areas, you'll see the Forms widget option over here in the Available Widgets. And you can then drag that over into any content area. And then you can choose to display the title or not. And then you can simply choose your form and click Save. So say I want to add, you know, the Contact Us form here to the After Entry widget. I can choose that form, click Save, and then that will show up on the site. And it's that easy to add, once you have the opt-in form created, it's that easy to add it to any page, any content area on the site that you want it to go on. Any final thoughts, Chris, about opt-in forms before we talk about where to present the opt-in?
I think that's good. Let's keep going.
Okay, let's roll. So let's talk about where to present the opt-in, because people will not take action unless they are asked to take action, and oftentimes repeatedly. So we want to present the opt-in form in a conspicuous way. Obviously, we want people to be able to see it, but we also need to balance it with not annoying people or overdoing it. But certainly, we need people to see the opt-in, and we need to be bold in asking for the opt-in so that people will take this action. So let's cover real quick the obvious places. And I say obvious because these are probably the first places that come to mind, and they're places that we've covered in one way or another in other sessions of the Rainmaker Site Building Roadmap. And Chris, I actually grabbed a couple of screenshots from your site. If you want to just talk real quick about, you know, kind of your goals here and putting your opt-in form here, you have one on your homepage. And this is a great place that you'll see on a lot of sites where they have an opt-in form right here. And you obviously clearly spell out the benefits right here. So when someone comes to your site, bam, they know exactly what you're going to do, and you're asking them for the opt-in right away.
Yeah, when somebody comes to your website homepage, they need to know where they are, why it should interest them, i.e. what's in it for me, and what to do next. And that's something we're going to repeat over and over again through this series, probably through this webinar. So once you've got that interest, it's a great time to ask for their email address, but tell them what they're going to get for adding their email address. And you've got to remember, one of the main reasons people go to your website homepage is because they want to find out more. They've gone from your social media, they've been given the link as a referral, you've written about it on a guest post, or you've mentioned it in an interview. In social media, a lot of the time, and in search engines especially, we click through to content. So going to your homepage is a special thing. They're either doing due diligence, they've followed a link about you in general, or they're interested in what you do. So tell them what it is you do, and then tell them why they should sign up. So that hero area on your homepage, if you've got a widget there, it's a great place to put it because it gives people context and also gives them an action. Now, not everybody's going to take that action. That might browse onto your content, so that's why there's more obvious places that we're going to talk about.
Yes, so let's keep going. The next obvious place is in the sidebar on your content pages. And Chris, you know, like you said, most people are, you know, clicking through from social media or maybe clicking through, you know, a link from somewhere else, and so they're not coming to the homepage, they're coming to a post. And obviously some people like sidebars, some people don't like sidebars. If you don't have it in a sidebar, you can put it in an after entry widget, or maybe you have it in a pop-up, or maybe you have it inline. But certainly you want to have it somewhere on every page so that people who are enthusiastic and intrigued by your content and want more, they have an easy way to get it without having to ask a lot of questions and dig real deep.
Yeah, and what you've got to think about as well is, even if they don't take the action straight away, it's in the peripheral vision. They know it's there. And so when they decide, yeah, I'm going to sign up, they know they can find it somewhere.
Yep. Some other options, we already talked about the after entry content area. So that is certainly one, and that's a popular one. And then you can do it inline on content pages. And we talked about that too. So you can put a form right in a page. So those are kind of some obvious places that we've talked about. Let's talk about a few maybe non-obvious setups for your opt-ins. And one is a site notice. And so site notices are a feature that are built into Rainmaker. And this example right here is from Brian Clark's site, further.net, which is using the site notice feature that is built into Rainmaker. So I want to just walk you through how to use site notices on your own site. And so to find site notices, you want to go to Manage Site Notices. And when you do that, you can either add a new site notice or you can edit an existing one. And so I'm showing you right now the site notices that I've used on the assembly call. And so I've got some different ones in here, some of them active, some simply in draft mode. But all the ones that I've created are right here, so I can edit them or add a new one. And the first step that you want to take is you want to create your content, and you do it really just like you would with any blog post. Now, obviously, the type of content that you're creating is different, and you're going to want this to be concise and to the point. It's not going to be as long as a blog post, but it's the same editor that you're using for creating content. So you can do it both in a visual or in a text way. I tend to like doing it in the text editor, but if you're more comfortable with the visual editor, you can certainly do that. But you want to create the content that will be in the site notice. All right, and what I would urge you to do is to consider adding style to your site notice, and you can do this really simply, for example, with block quotes. So Chris talked earlier about the benefit of using testimonials near any type of opt-in, because it shows, hey, other people like this content, other people have been enthusiastic like me and decided to subscribe. It's also a great way to reinforce the benefits of your content, and so you can stylize that with, for example, a block quote. And you can also add buttons. So, you know, with a site notice, as I showed you with Brian's, you know, he's got a form right there. And so you can certainly use a form and just have someone add their email address. Or if you want to link people to a landing page, which is what I've done with this particular site notice, then you can use the class equals button class for a link. And that will turn that link into a button. And so you can do all of that from in here in the content editing section of site notices. And again, as I mentioned, you know, if you want your form to appear inline, then add the short code anywhere within the content, as I showed you to do in the previous tutorial. And again, in this example, I'm using the button for my join page. And really, the reason why I'm doing that is I like sending people to the larger landing page to make the case for membership without cluttering up the site notice. I want the site notice to be quicker and to the point, link people over, and I'll show you an example of this here when we get to the end of the tutorial. So the next thing that you want to do is you want to edit your pop-up settings. So, you know, for more information on what each one of these settings means, you can search notices in the knowledge base, and it'll really walk you through this entire site notice process if you have questions after seeing this tutorial. But basically, you can obviously put the check mark here to enable the pop-up or not. You can decide whether to display the site notice immediately when the page loads or after someone scrolls. You can decide how
scroll.
Yeah, I would recommend scroll as well, and I've done that on all of mine. And then you can actually determine how far down the page someone needs to go before the pop-up is going to show up. So maybe you want people to have to go, you know, just 25% or 50% of the way down. You can determine that. You can also determine how many days should lapse between displays. And then you can also have an HTML element that will trigger the pop-up to show how many pages before showing. So some different settings there that you can fiddle with and decide what's going to be the best for you. Then the next step is you want to edit the design settings. And as you can see, you really do have a lot of flexibility with the style of the site notice box. So from the box background color to the border color to the border width to the heading color and text color, you can choose all of those for your site notice, which makes it really easy to edit the design. And then you choose your display settings. And so you can choose which types of content the site notice is going to appear on. So maybe you want it to go on every page on your site. Awesome. Click every page. If you only want it to go on certain pages, then you can click certain pages. You know, maybe you just want it to go on the front page and podcast episodes, or maybe this site notice, you know, maybe you're going to be doing, you know, adding a feature to your forum soon, you know, or a new forum is coming. And so you want to have a site notice on any forum page so that when someone visits that forum page, they get a notification that this new forum or discussion is coming. Cool. You can use site notices and it'll show up just on the forum page. So, you know, I know it's, you know, we're kind of, the way that I introduced this, I framed it kind of as a pop-up for grabbing a subscription, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. It can be, you know, just something to let your members, you know an important message, you know, let them know that a webinar is coming up. A lot of different ways that you can use site notices, both to grab subscriptions, encourage memberships, or just to communicate with people who are on your site. And then really one of the best features about site notices is that you can determine what member groups should or shouldn't see it. So just like any page, you can determine, you know, who has access to this. You can do the same thing with the site notice. So I can say, okay, people who do not have access to the Assembly Call free membership, that's who I want to see this, right? Because if it's an opt-in for free membership, then those are the only people that I want to see it. There's no reason for someone who's already a member to see it if it's talking about the benefits of a free membership. So you can decide that and really help yourself give the best experience to your audience. And then finally, as I said, this is one of the best features about site notices. And then you can hit publish like you would on a normal blog post to make the site notice live. And then you would just click update if you're going to make changes and update those changes. And don't worry, you can always change its status to draft at any time. So as soon as you publish it, it's going to be on, and based on your settings, it will start displaying. But if at any time you want to pull it back into draft mode, just come in here, pull it to draft, make any changes, and then you can change the status to published later if you want to. And so this is an example of the site notice that I just showed you. So again, you know, I've got my headline right here, which, you know, kind of discusses one of the benefits, you know, enjoy a better IU fan experience. I've got my block quotes right here with the testimonials. And then a best practice that I really like to do with my, you know, site notices and really any larger opt-in area is you can offer your preferred option plus an acceptable step-down option. So I've got, you know, tell me more about my free membership, and obviously I want people to get the free membership, but I'd be okay if they just subscribe to the email newsletter, which is kind of a subset. It's a feature of the free membership, but then the free membership gives people a lot of other things. And when people do subscribe to the newsletter, I've got calls to action in my autoresponder that try to sell them on the benefits of the free membership. So I've got my preferred option, I've got my secondary option, and there's always a third option no matter what, which is to click the X to do nothing, right? But you kind of frame it as, you know, choose one of these two options, and then you focus the eye on the preferred option. And that's why I used the built-in Rainmaker feature to create a button and use that class equals button class to add a button right there, and that's what it will look like. And hopefully then that drives people over to my free membership page. And I don't show it here, but if you want to see how I have that free membership page set up, you can go to assemblycall.com/join and see how I have that set up, because it's really encouraging the membership. But again, if someone just wants to subscribe to the email newsletter, I'm okay with that too, because I have a whole sequence that then tries to get them onto the free membership. But that's how you would use site notices to set that entire sequence up.
So a lot of people are asking if this site notice feature is about pop-ups. It can do pop-ups, but it does more than that. So if you want to just do like a welcome message for your members or a certain member group, or if you want to do a welcome message to everybody that visits the homepage, you can do that with this without it being a pop-up. So it's for any kind of notice. So a lot of people use it for opt-in forms and the regular sort of pop-up idea, but it's not just about that. And it's something that we would like to develop more over time, because we found it so useful for our own stuff. And as Jared showed, Jared uses it, Brian uses it, I'm going to start testing one on my own site. And another point, Jared's on screen's got two options: yes, tell me more, and no, I'll subscribe to the email. Try that on your own forms, because in some testing, people have found it has a boost in conversion if you give people two options. Other people have found one option is better, so try it. It's these experiments that are going to boost your conversion for opt-ins and get more opt-ins, get more people happy onto your list.
Okay, so that's site notices. Now let's talk about adaptive opt-in. And so, Belinda, when I mentioned earlier kind of an interesting new technique, this is what I was mentioning. So I use this technique on assemblycall.com with great success, and it's, you know, obviously just using the built-in Rainmaker feature. So let me kind of give you the overview here. So this is the after entry widget on any post or piece of content that we have at assemblycall.com. And this is viewing it as a non-logged in user. Okay, so you can see it promotes the free membership, right? So indulge your love for your Indiana Hoosiers. It gives some bullet points of everything that you get. I've got my two great testimonials right here surrounding the box, and they also kind of serve to funnel the attention of the eye right there to the button, which I like, and then so join for free now. And, you know, the thing is, I could add an opt-in form directly to this widget, and in fact, again, if you go actually look at the landing page for assemblycall.com/join, you'll see where there is the form right there for the membership that they can fill in. But I've seen really good success sending people directly to the free membership landing page. And so I like just sending them there, and it makes this widget a little bit less complicated right here on the page. It's probably something that I could A/B test, but I've had really great success doing it this way, and so I've continued to do it this way with sending people there. But this is how it looks for people who are not logged in. All right, now, this is the exact same after entry widget, but viewed as a logged in user. All right, and what this does is, you know, I've got it addresses them by their first name. That's a nice part about having someone as a member is, you know, you typically have their first name, and so you can adapt that content to have a nice friendly salutation, which a lot of times when you're on a piece of content and you see yourself addressed by name, kind of stops you in your tracks a little bit because you're not expecting it. And that's part of the goal here is people are scrolling down, they see, hey, Jared, whoa, how does he know who's on here reading? Right, and so this thanks the visitor for being a free member, and then it actually provides two ways for them to support the show. Because someone who is a free member, they've probably been engaging with our content, you know, maybe they participate in our chats and they listen to our podcast and they do all of this, they're much more likely to want to support the show. Because if you go to a lot of sites, you know, you'll see sites that monetize via donations, they have it at the bottom of every page. And that's great and all, but I would much rather, you know, have progressive steps for folks. And so if someone isn't even taking advantage of the free membership yet, I think it's going to be quite unlikely that they're actually going to donate. And so that's why I save this for people who are logged in when they're on the site. And again, we've seen a lot of donations come from just having this there, adapting it based on who's on the page. So now the question is, how do you do this? All right, so let's see real quick how easy this is to create. So you want to go to design content areas, all right, the place that we've been many times throughout this webinar, and you want to use a text widget, all right, just a very, very simple text widget. And I've got this exact text widget opened for you here so you can actually see what it looks like in the widget. All right, now you're going to use a short code to show content to a specific member group, and then you're going to hide content from the same member group. And this works very well because it ensures that no one can see the exact same thing. Because if you're showing it to that member group and then hiding other content, they're going to see one or the other, but they're not going to see both. Okay. So in this case, I am showing, okay, this messaging right here to the access to the free membership group by which is determined here by access level equals free. So here is the entire opening short code, right? The show to short code with access level free, because that's what I've named that member group. And then this is the content that they are going to see. So thank you for, you know, I've got, you know, hey, it's going to add their first name. Thank you for being a member of the assembly call. We hope you enjoyed this post. And it goes on and gives them the call to action. And I've even embedded my PayPal link so that they can choose a recurring donation option right there from the page. All right, now, if you scroll down on the widget, you will see where the show to short code ends. So you always need to end your short code the same way that you would end any type of HTML tag. So you're going to close that show to, and then you'll see where the hide from tag begins. So I am hiding this content from the free member group with the short code hide from, and then with access level equals free. So people who are free members will not see this, so only non-members will see it. And this is then the call to action for the free membership landing page. All right? So again, people who are already members, they have no reason to see this messaging. Right? They are already members. They don't need to know the benefits of membership. They don't need, you know, their eyesight and attention wasted on a link to the landing page. And so by setting it up this way, no one can see both messages, and the page is going to adapt to the status of the user. So the question is, what experience is going to be most useful to your visitors? And it's probably going to be one or the other. And so an adaptive opt-in allows you to deliver it. And this is the power of that logged-in experience and why, you know, really, obviously getting the subscription and getting someone on an email list is really good and very valuable. But if you can create a compelling enough free membership to get people into that free membership, and we're going to talk in a second about, you know, what is a compelling opt-in incentive, well, now when you have people who are members and they're logged in using your site, you can deliver this kind of adaptive experience to them, which is just going to help you deepen that relationship and make sure that your calls to action are as relevant as they possibly can be. I'll go look and see if there are questions here, Chris, but any thoughts on the adaptive opt-in process that I showed there?
Yeah, so I'm just going to drop into the chat that you can actually show to and hide from tags. Now, it's not as reliable as that logged-in experience because it relies on cookies and it relies on you setting the cookie. So it's not going to be as good as somebody logging in, but you might not have a membership. and you still want to do something like this. So you can show to and hide from people who are on your Rainmail email list and you've tagged. So it's not as 100% safe as what Jared just showed, because getting people to log in sets the tag, and you know you know what the member group is and you know the name. But if they've got a cookie from the email opt-in and they're still tagged and they still have the cookie, then you can say, hey, Jared, and you can show and hide to the tag.
Yep.
It's not as 100% reliable, but it's still an option there. So a couple of people have asked about that. And it's the main reason, I would say, for anybody. There's a few people said, well, I use MailChimp, I use AWeber, why would I use Rainmail? Those extra abilities is the reason I would use Rainmail. But if it's going to overwhelm you, if it's going to give you procrastination or analysis paralysis, stick with what you know.
Yep. Nicholas asked, do you still have to close the hide from code? And the answer there is yes. I just didn't scroll down here far enough. But if you scroll down farther in the widget, you would see a hide from tag just like this with the forward slash to close it. So you do have to close it. Just to clarify. All right, so let's move on now to our final section, how to create a powerful opt-in incentive. The big key here is that you want to make it compelling enough to cut through the noise, because there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of opt-in incentives being pushed out there, so that you can drive the action. And Chris, let me turn this slide over to you, talking about creating a compelling incentive. Maybe start us off with an overview here of what we should be thinking about.
Yeah, so just saying something's free is no longer an incentive on its own. Free email is kind of like the base minimum that people expect, and just asking people to sign up isn't going to do it. So what you have to do is create something with compelling value, something that connects with their pain or their goal, right? So everybody's moving towards something or away from something, away from pain or towards a goal, something they want to achieve. So you need to promise something that's a step along that way, something that's got inherent value, and something that actually demonstrates a solution. So when they consume it and they take action, they see evidence that you know what you're talking about, or that you can deliver on your promises. In Jared's case, he's talking about sports, so he has to show his expertise about that sport. He has to show that he has knowledge and insight that they wouldn't otherwise have access to. With my site, I'm doing how-tos, I'm doing tutorials. So I want to help them achieve something that they couldn't do before. So it's got a clear value. And the rule of thumb is, create something that you could sell, that they would be willing to buy, but instead of selling it for money, you sell it for in return for an email address, so that they actually want this thing. And it gives them some immediate gratification, some instant gratification. And you'll see the retweet button on there. That's how you get a positive cycle of subscriptions, because on the thank you page, you can create a Twitter button and, you know, social media buttons to get people then to say, hey, I've just got this great thing, and share it. And so even though I'm not promoting my course that I used to run, I still get people signing up for the free email and then clicking that Twitter button, and I see it in my Twitter mentions that says, hey, I've just signed up for the next webinar, even though I'm not running webinars, I really should take it down. So it shows that it's still promoting itself, even though I haven't actually promoted it for a good couple of years now. So get their interest, show them some value, show them some practical, real value when they consume it, and then get them to share it.
Yep, and you know, while we're on this topic of compelling incentives, I wanted to go over, we covered this in the last Q&A, but Chris, we both wanted to put it in this section, you know, which is, you know, your incentive may be a thing, like it may be, you know, a PDF, or it may be a member library with, you know, a bunch of different PDFs or slides or different files, and we often get the question, you know, how do I organize those? What's the best way to actually load those into Rainmaker and then be able to distribute them in the most effective way? And the way that you want to do that is you want to use the download manager. So I'm not going to go through every step that we went through in the Q&A, but I do want to quickly just run you through this, how this works. So go to the conversion menu and click download manager, and then you want to upload your file. And so on this page here where you're creating your new download, you want to give your download file a descriptive name. You want to decide what member groups will have access to it. There's some other options over here that you want to choose for what is going to work best for you and the goal, the purpose of this download. And then once you click Save, you'll know that the upload was successful when you see the file name here in this field, which was previously blank, and you'll be able to take this URL right here and then use that to create a link on any page on your site. Okay, so you copy this link right here, right, and then you can insert it into any page on your site, or you can choose to insert the download from the editor options. And there's a button here for insert download. You have that descriptive file name, so as you start typing in, you know, something like if it's slides, maybe you want to begin it with slides and then, you know, be a little bit more descriptive, so you can just kind of start typing in the more general one and then choose it based on the rest of the descriptive title. So you want to choose that, then click Insert Download, and now you'll have a clickable link right here to your PDF, and you can easily make that link a button. Again, if you add class equals button to the link code, and now your audience will be able to get the PDF with one click of a button. Okay, that's great. You know, we've got this download up there. But the big benefit here is now if you make this a members-only page, right, or if you wrap it in show to or hide from, like if you had this right here wrapped in a show to tag only for members, only they would see it. And maybe to get to, you know, that part of the page, then they've got to opt in, they've got to become a free member on your site. So now you have this incentive for people to take that next step because they just have to get this PDF, or they just have to get, you know, this content series that you have, you know, in your library, or they have to get access to this webinar, whatever it is. And so, you know, putting stuff behind that membership wall, using show to hide from short codes, some of the other ways that Rainmaker facilitates that, that really, once you have your opt-in incentive, that helps you structure it in a way that's going to help you drive those memberships. And you could also deliver it via an autoresponder, right? And the autoresponder they might only be able to get by opting in, but you include that link in the autoresponder. Now you've got their email address, they're on your list, you can continue communicating with them, and they're going to get this compelling incentive from you. Any final thoughts on that, Chris, before we move on to autoresponders? Because that's what we want to discuss next. Briefly.
Yeah, so the reason why you'd protect that page or show and hide and, you know, show it to a member group or show it to a tag is because some people do like to share that thank you page so they don't have to opt in. I had, back when I launched ChrisG.com, well, relaunched it in 2006 or 2007, I had a contact who shared my sign-up incentive to his entire list. So 6,000 people got my sign-up incentive without opting in, and that frustrated me. So that's a reason to protect it, right? So you either protect it with the tags or protect it with the member group, but it just means that they have to opt in. And for people who are not in that member group, people who are not present on that tag, you can give them the sign-up incentive form, the opt-in form, and then they can just add their email address and get it. So anybody that publicizes that page isn't going to get people the incentive without the thing that gets the incentive.
Yep. So let's talk about autoresponders, Chris. And
yeah,
we're not going to go into it too much because we will have in a future session, I mean, we're going to really break down email and autoresponders, so we'll get into them a little bit more there. But it is relevant here, you know, because obviously if you're going to get a subscription, get a membership, that's a great time to really engage with people, and an autoresponder is a perfect way to do that.
Yeah, and there's a few reasons why we encourage this. So the main reason is don't make the mistake I made. On ChrisG.com, I get a lot of people who sign up for the free ebooks, and then they immediately unsubscribe and say, I just wanted the ebooks. So you need instant gratification, yes, but you also want to give them a sense of some future value, right? So you need to tell them that great things are coming, don't leave, because you want that retention and you want to build that relationship over time, which means they need to get drip, drip, drip of emails from you. So that's the first reason. The second reason is you break down big overwhelming blocks of content into more manageable bite-sized pieces. So you actually make it more achievable for them and less overwhelming by breaking it up. Instead of a big, big thing, you can give them something that's immediately useful and then say, okay, for part two, part three, keep looking in your inbox, and it'll come in the next few days or it'll come weekly. And that gives people both a reason to opt in, but also stay on, but also give them a reason to take action because it's achievable. It's something they can actually do and they can consume and it fits into their lifestyle. Now, there is another reason why you would want to give people an autoresponder sequence, and it's for you as a business, is the more impressions of you, the more contact they have with you, the more touch points, the more likely they are to take the actions that you want them to. So you, after the sequence, you can make them an offer. They're going to be more disposed to take action on that offer.
Yep. And if you're wondering where you set up those autoresponders in Rainmail, it's very simple. Go to, you can just go to Add New, and you can choose autoresponder sequence, or you can find autoresponders from the content menu. And then we actually have some template sequences for you. So you can start blank and just create from scratch, which is totally cool. Or we have some examples. So we have a course autoresponder, we have a sales autoresponder, and we have a newsletter with offer. And so you can go in there, you know, it's kind of got some dummy content for you and some actual, you know, kind of tips and coaching for how to do it. But you can choose which sequence that you want to use to get started. And again, we'll go into that in much more detail as we go further in the Rainmaker site building roadmap. But there are also some great tutorials in the knowledge base. But I think what you'll find with the autoresponder is it really is just an amazingly intuitive feature to use. And some of the things that you can do in the way that you turn a message on, turn a message off, just really, really simple to use. So I encourage you to go in there, you know, choose one of these, get started, and get yourself an autoresponder set up so that you're ready when people do subscribe. And then the last thing, Chris, that we want to cover is webinars. So do you want to give us kind of the overview of what a webinar can do? And then we've got some features built into Rainmaker 2 that help facilitate this.
Yeah, so this is an advanced technique, and the integration we've got is GoToWebinar. GoToWebinar is not cheap. They do have some sort of a trial, I believe, but it's not a cheap option. It's not the first thing you're going to go to, but it's very powerful. And the reason why webinars are so powerful is you have to register for them. People expect it. They anticipate that they have to register. So you get email addresses. You get the opportunity to tag people that they've shown an interest, so that gives you a really good insight into what's compelling people to take action, because it's a hoop people have to jump through. It's not just clicking the button. It's something that, you know, they have to take a solid action in, so it gives you a really good idea of what people are really interested in. Gives you an opportunity to engage your audience and interact with them. Remember, we're talking about retention, we're relationship building here. And it gives them a sense of anticipation and excitement. It's a sense of event. It's something like they've bought a ticket for an event and they're going to look forward to it and they're going to be excited while they're on it. So just think of how you feel when you sign up for one of our webinars, even the free ones. It still gives you a sense of this is more than just reading an article. Okay, so it's a really good incentive. So we've got integration built in. It's in the labs, so you have to enable labs. And then you need to go into the labs features and check enable GoToWebinar module. Then you go into your content settings. In your content settings, you can connect to your GoToWebinar account. And that enables this next button on this next slide. On any page or post, you can add a webinar registration button, or you can make it actually automatic. So if you auto register, so you check that auto register, no button click. As soon as you hit that page, it's going to take them to the registration and take them to the thank you page or show the message. So if you check those both of those buttons on your thank you page, you can make them register for the GoToWebinar automatically, and then you can show a thank you page after that. And that's really powerful if your sign-up incentive is to register for the next webinar, because all they have to do is register for the site and GoToWebinar gets all the information that they need. They don't have to type in the name and their email address again. It's all done automatically. So you can have a button that they click, like if it's in the LMS, you know, you're running a course and they need to register there. Or you can make it so they don't have to click a button, it just takes them there straight away. So that's two good options, and it makes it a little bit smoother. It means that you get more people registered for the webinar. And as I say, the engagement on webinars is really awesome, especially if they're fully live. You know, you're asking questions while we type that, while we speak, you know, you're typing your questions. It shows that you're real people, and it's really engaging, it's really interactive, and it allows you to share your knowledge and experience.
Yep, and you know, obviously this is very simple if you use GoToWebinar and you can use these Rainmaker features, but there are some pretty simple ways if you use Zoom. You know, if you do webinars on Google Hangouts, again, you know, you can use your basic, you know, Rainmaker features of show to and hide from and having you know, member-only pages, restricted pages, that kind of thing. There are some pretty simple ways to set up really good webinar, you know, registration sequences, even if you can't use the GoToWebinar features. So, and maybe that would be a good topic for an entire session one of these days. Okay, well, I think that brings us to the end of this presentation. However, I will tell you that coming up, we have a Q&A next week on using Rainmaker to turn blog traffic into subscribers. So if you had any questions that we couldn't get to today, or you know, in the next couple days, if you know, start thinking about something and you have a question, definitely let us know. Submit it ahead of time because priority is given to questions submitted ahead of time, and we're able to prepare some slides for you. And then coming up the week after, we're going to get into traffic and SEO. So how to use Rainmaker to get more traffic, visibility, and sales. That session will be Thursday, April 4th. We haven't set the time for it yet, but rest assured that we will let you know the time once we have it, and we'll let you know on that Q&A session, and obviously when we send you out the registration information. And Chris, are there any lingering questions here that we haven't had a chance to get to?
I think the questions that I can see that we haven't covered, I think are better for the Q&A session because they're quite detailed. I don't want to just skim over them right now because we've gone
I
over
agree.
by 20 minutes already. So please do ask your question in the Q&A because some great questions we couldn't get to today.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you everybody for being here. Wonderful session. We appreciate all of the questions and activity. And Chris, thank you for being here and lending all of your insight.
It's always fun.
It is always fun. We will talk to you all next week on the Q&A. Take care.